Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. And you're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. We're talking with Doug Packard. How are you, sir?
Happy to be here today.
Great. He's the CEO and owner of Renaissance Executive Forums, and he has a brand new book. That's right, a brand new book, hitting the air. Lead Your Journey, Decide to Be the CEO of Your Life. Doug, why'd you write a book?
It's primarily a tribute to my clients. I've been a coach and facilitator of advisory boards since 2002, and my clients have taught me so much and allowed me to evolve my journey along with theirs, and I really felt like I owed it to them and owed it to other people to share some of the tactics and tools that I've learned and developed in conjunction with my clients.
Well, certainly we're going to get into those as we talk through the book and so forth. Tell us a little bit about your background. Tell us a little bit about Renaissance Executive Forums. Give a sense to what you've done over those years.
I'm a Maine native and grew up in the 70s. And as I started my career, computers were the coming things. And I wanted to make some money and I wanted to have some adventure. And I wanted to have some time probably outside of Maine, much as I love Maine. So I accepted an offer with NCR Corporation, selling computers to banks. And I figured banks had money, and computers were the coming thing, and I wouldn't be stuck in an office. So I was here in Maine doing that for several years, and then climbed the corporate ladder for about 22 years. And when 9/11 hit, my wife and I said, what are we doing in Dayton, Ohio? We really would like to be back home, and isn't it time for you to have your own company as you've always dreamed of? And so I went on my search, and part of one of the tools that's in the book and that is, I've helped many people with is very germane to what you do, which is figuring out what are the characteristics of the next gig for Doug, in this case, that are going to float my boat. At the time, I was 44 and had a successful corporate career and satisfying but not really fulfilling in the ways that I wanted it to be. And so I came up with seven criteria and started my journey. And when I came across peer advisory boards, that idea, that concept, it actually hit all seven of my criteria.
And what were the seven criteria?
Oh, boy, you're going to test me now. The very first one and prioritized one was schedule flexibility. I had gotten into strategic planning in my last couple of positions in corporate America. And it really bugged me to have to be in the office at 8 a.m. and stay till 6, whether my brain was, you know, on high gear that day or not. And I also didn't want to miss my three sons' youth. So I wanted to have schedule flexibility where I could go to their golf matches, et cetera. Didn't mind working, nights or weekends if I had to do it around that, but just wanted to have that schedule flexibility. And so that was the first one. Another one was actually around travel. I had traveled the world with in the corporate days and enjoyed it, but again, tied with that idea of being around for my son's youth, for this next stage, I did not want to travel. So another one, just to give an example of a practical one from learning from business. I'd met a number of consultants, and actually one of my roles in both my last two positions in corporate was to interview, hire, and then manage consultants on projects. So I got a great education as to what I liked and didn't like about consultants. And so one of the things I saw that quite often a consultant would have two or three large customers at any one point in time. And then if a CEO got canned or something shifted, all of a sudden a third or a half of their income was gone. So what I was looking for, one of my criteria was to not be overly dependent on any one customer or any one entity. And a rule of thumb that I found for that is to have no one customer that's more than 5% of your income. That way, two things. One is if one leaves, it's not the end of the earth. And especially in coaching, it makes it easier for you to tell them what they really need to hear, quite honestly.
No, you're absolutely right.
So it's actually
right.
better for them. So.
No, you're absolutely right. So. You know, it's interesting, these three that you've given me so far are things that people think about when they're talking about their career decisions, right? So I think the fact that you're providing these seven is good for people to think about. You know, do these things matter to me, right?
Exactly.
All right, so what were the last four?
Oh, boy, going to test me. One was I wanted to work at this criteria actually has evolved in a very great way for me. Initially, it was I wanted to work with people that I could trust and I could learn from. And that goes back to, my corporate career where, again, you get any large organization with a lot of people trying to build their careers, and it only takes one or two people with a little less than great ethics to make it a little bit miserable to go to work. So just kind of the nature of the beast, unfortunately. And so it started out as I could trust and learn from. But as I got more and more honest with myself, it really was that I wanted to have relationships with people that I could have a long-term, deeply meaningful, impactful relationship with. And so I knew because of those last two criteria, I didn't want to have just, a few clients at once, but I also didn't want to have hundreds. And so, again, that matched the criteria of having, tens of clients versus hundreds and also not having, five, say,
sure.
for example.
Sure.
So, let me see. Another was to be able to have a good business plan around having an above average, income. So that's things you can do with these other criteria, but might not hit a certain, level of. But at the same time, I wasn't, and for my case only, I wasn't looking to necessarily build something that would made me into a multimillionaire. It wasn't the primary, which a lot of people think of as they're buying a business or they're starting a business. Their primary thing, whether they know it or not, is often, I need to build this into X size and then sell it, and that's the whole thing. And sometimes they don't think about much else as
sure,
to what,
sure.
what's going to make them happy.
Exactly
so,
right.
Yeah. So,
okay, I'll give you a pass on the last.
Thank you. Test my memory.
That's all right. We're talking with Doug Packard. We're talking about his new book, Lead Your Journey. You wrote this book to tribute to clients, right? So I guess the real question is, you've done leadership development over many, many years. Was it really simple to pull together the key things, or was it difficult to do?
Well, it evolves over time. I think all of our versions of what a successful leader is, be that the general public or be that for each of us as an individual, changes over time. And I think it really has evolved in a positive way. And I think that obviously I'm biased about my clients in Maine and New Hampshire, which is where I've limited myself to for the time being, in that most people that don't know business leaders have a tendency to believe that they don't work hard, that they're out to just kind of take advantage of their employees, that it's all about the profit. And really, for the most part, nothing could be further from the truth for the majority of business leaders. The ones that do well and survive over time are the ones that do care about their employees, that do care about the community, that are trying to do the right thing. Do they need to make a profit? Sure, to make the company stable and going on. But for the most part, a lot of my coaching has been helping leaders give themselves permission, which actually was going to be the name of the book, Give Yourself Permission, but it was taken, not allow others to take advantage of them and not for them to not work on some things on their bucket list and for them to not spend their time the way they are best and fitted to and give themselves permission, for example, to get a right-hand person to do some of the things that they aren't as good at or they don't enjoy. So as an example.
I think that's true. One of the things that I find with leaders is they sometimes, especially when they're in the early stages, they have to do everything themselves, right? They have to have the hands in everything.
Mm-hmm.
And they struggle to give up control,
exactly.
right? To give up control. And I think that's true for most leaders, to be honest with you. It is hard to give up control. And so when you're talking to them, and we're talking about the book, What are some of the things that leaders can do to actually feel comfortable having that control move to a different person?
One of my most successful clients who's been a CEO of many companies, in fact, he was an executive forums member in California, then Massachusetts, then with me. He has this saying for his own forum group, which is, you know, the key thing for a CEO is to find out what you're not good at and don't do it. And
profound.
And he kept, you know, but it's a way to kind of remember that if you really want to grow a company, that you do have to find the things you aren't as good at and then hire somebody that's better at it than you would be. And so part of it is literally, it's another piece of this decide to be the CEO or lead your journey is that's one of the key things in the book is letting go of some of those things and saying, gee, I don't have to be good at everything, even though I'm an intelligent person, an intelligent leader, and I could learn it and I could kind of make myself walk through the steps and have some level of success at it. I'm not going to get as far as I want. Another is that literally it comes down to we vote with our checkbook and our schedule. So one of the other things I go into fairly deeply with tools, et cetera, in the book is something I call time leadership, which I've given some presentations on and will be giving some more on in the future here. So instead of time management, it's literally being a time leader where you are consciously working yourself out of some of the roles and deciding for this coming year, what percentage of my time should I really spend or invest in which roles? And having this is what I'm going to do this year, here's what I'll do next year, and then my ideal, say 3 years from now, is this, where I'd be spending X percent of my time here on the thing I love to do and I'm really good at, and X percent of my time here. So being intentional about that, where you spend your time and invest your time, really, and about handing off those things to key people. And to take it one step further, there's another tool in the book that says, okay, well, what do you do with these activities or these things that you're not going to do? And I have in there a progression of things you can do. So as an example, sometimes we don't even think of this. Some things we do that the company or you should just plain stop doing. You know, I've always gone to a certain industry group or I've always done this. And if you really stop and think, what return have I or the company really gotten on it? And you go, nothing, haven't gotten a client from it in 5 years. Well, instead of sending somebody else, maybe we should just not do it. Which often we don't think of that as the first. And again, a key thing is quite often figuring out what not to do.
Isn't it hard sometimes for people to look at objectively their own actions?
It is. I think one of the sayings I have often for people is that we're all in our own forest, and it's tough to see the trees that are in our own forest. And so I believe that everybody at every level needs a coach. So someone who is looking at, I mean, even if, you know, a Tiger Woods or you know, Rory McIlroy, whatever, as good as they are, they have a coach who can see when their grip changes and they don't even know they changed their grip, but the coach can see it because they've seen it over years or they've got it taped. And they're able to say, well, let me give you this feedback. Did you mean to change your grip? No, didn't even know I changed my grip, right? So very similar to that with anybody like say.
Yeah. I mean, it is hard for individuals to sometimes see, little changes, right? That can make a huge impact. That's the real thing, right? Is that a little change can make a huge impact.
Yeah, one of my things that we talk about quite often, we do an annual workshop as part of being a member of a forum in these invitation-only forums. And quite often in that workshop, we'll have different assessments and tools. And one of the things that comes up quite often is that we all have our to-do list. But for a successful leader to go even further, in my opinion, what's even more important than the to-do list is the to-be list. So we all show up in different instances in a different way. And if we're not getting the results we want in a certain role that we have or a certain situation or with a certain, you know, employee, then one of the things I help them think about is, well, how could you approach the situation differently? And quite often, to your point, with just a little bit of adjustment in your approach to somebody, it can make all the difference in the world. It also sets the example for the rest of your team and others that, you know, they could be improving and changing and adjusting too if they choose to.
Also, executives sometimes forget that others have the same problems they do, right? They do. And sometimes getting them to hear that they're not the only one with that problem can really help.
Yes, quite often when I first initially meet, and I have had – one-on-one exploratory meetings with over 1,500 CEO and business owners. And typically we go pretty deep pretty quick. You know, what's your vision for this business? How'd you get here? Really, what's your definition of success? And like most of us, it's fuzzy at best. But quite often they will start off saying, well, you don't understand. My business is unique. That's all they always start with. And I said, well, tell me how. And one of my good friends and clients that's a CPA says, oh, I hear the same thing too. And he says, you know, what I say, well, you got special debits and credits? Because if you do, we got another different problem. But really, exactly at the end of the day, we all got customers, we all got employees, we all got, you know, a lot of the same issues. And time after time, when a new member enters one of my forums, they will often say, even after just one meeting, and say, gee, you know, I couldn't believe how similar the issues were. And I just had a new person join that's a manufacturer, and there aren't too many manufacturers in Maine, so there was only a couple other manufacturers in the group. And when he joined, he said, well, I did have reservations about they weren't manufacturers, right, as much. But he said after one meeting, I could see all the issues almost all over.
Oh, absolutely correct. And there are similarities across all platforms. Now, there are uniquenesses to all businesses, too, but there are similarities to all platforms. When you wrote this book, what were you hoping that somebody would take away from it?
I get sent a lot of people my way that are in transition, and so I have a soft spot for that since I've been there a couple of times. And especially if it's like myself, primary breadwinner, three children, et cetera, there's a lot of pressure and a lot of soul searching. And so what I try to do is give them a little start as to their journey, connect them with people, et cetera. And then if they're ready to go deeper, send them to someone like yourself if they want to do some more assessment testing, those kinds of things. And so I find sometimes, again, being in the same boat with them and being able to explain how I was in those periods too helps. And then having been a coach back here in Maine since 2002, I've got lots and lots of resources to connect them with. But then also them just going through this exercise I have them do is I have them take a piece of paper and down the left-hand side literally list everything they've ever done, any role they've ever had. And then on the top of the list, just two things. What did you like about it? What did you not like about it? And allow yourself to go down memory lane, and all of a sudden what you're going to be filling in is some potential criteria or attributes for that next gig. And so using the example we talked a little bit about earlier, just as an easy practical example, travel, right? When I filled mine in, I loved the travel when I was doing it. I got to go all over the world, right? But I realized travel had to be one of my criteria, but for this next phase or this last phase, that I didn't want to travel. So I had to, but at least I had one of my criteria, and I could, as people offered me things, my next chart, which is also in the book, is what are the different opportunities I'm being offered, and what are different kind of generic roles I've thought of, and then at the top, what are my criteria, and now start rating the different opportunities against those criteria, and I could go say, oh, gee, this is so exciting, this job somebody's offered me, or this business somebody's offered me to sell me, and I go, it fits this. Oh, wait a minute, travel would probably be 40% travel. Can't do it. So instead of jumping in and waiting, you know, 6 months or a year to realize that, I'm able to realize it ahead of time that the situation would serve my life versus vice versa.
We're talking with Doug Packard. He is a consultant, CEO and owner of Renaissance Executive Forums, and his book, Lead Your Journey, Decide to Be the CEO of Your Life. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM, and we'll be right back.
At 154 years old, Verrill Dana has an illustrious history and more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill Dana serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill Dana, one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact them today at verrilldana.com.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at JacksonLewis.com. That's JacksonLewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. Today we're talking, yes we are, we're talking about a book, Lead Your Journey, Decide to Be the CEO of Your Life. Interested? Well, listen more, because we're going to talk with Doug Packard, and we're going to talk about his book, which, by the way, is new, and you should go to Amazon right now, or you can go to hrpowerhour.com after the show, and you can click on it, get it, because it's awesome. Yes, that's right, awesome. You heard that live from me. All right, so let's talk about your book, Doug. Tell us about the chapters. Tell us about how you put it together. Tell us about, you know, what somebody should be looking at if they don't have time to read everything. What are the key points to get in and read about?
The book really evolved with a co-writer of mine named Jeff Pike. And I had been asked to write articles for Maine Biz, which is the major business publication here in Maine. And so I had plenty of ideas for it. And he happened to be in my consulting association. But I said, you know, to myself, gee, I'm a slow writer. Again, talking back to some of the things of what are you good at, what you're not so good at. And so I can talk, but I can't write that well. So anyways, he said, I'll help you with the articles. And so literally he would interview me for about a half hour. I would outline an idea, and I would kind of talk through the outline. He would tape that phone call, and then he would write the first draft. So after about 3 years of that, he said to me, we need to do a book. And I said, what are you talking about? And he says, well, you haven't done a book. And he says, I hear a voice and a theme through your articles, and we got plenty for a book with some adjustment, et cetera. So I said, well, if you're up for it, I am too. So we set a schedule. Another example of self-leadership, which this book is mostly about. We put on the calendar a couple hours once a month, and we had to come up with an outline of a chapter for that. So I started with the introduction, and one of the things, one of my philosophies as a coach and consultant and in the forums is I don't ask my clients to do anything I'm not willing to do. So the book starts out with my transition from what I call living life the way I'm supposed to, which is kind of by other people's rules, to living a life the way I was meant to, which means by my rules. That major transition was at 44, going from corporate to my own company. It even involved moving from Ohio back home to Maine. And it's just been really fulfilling to do that. So I'm hoping that that's kind of inspiring to people that they could make a major transition to, even if it's just letting go part of their role at work. So then I went into these different chapters, eight chapters, trying to segment the different success themes and techniques that I have learned about and or developed kind of with conjunction with my clients. So the very first one is really about giving yourself permission to take care of yourself. What I find so often in successful leaders, successful people, they're givers. And they're giving, and often to their own detriment. So when you get on a plane and they start through the safety procedures, what do they say to you if the oxygen drops down?
Put it on first and then help a child or help somebody else.
And why do they say to put it on yourself first?
Because you're useless if you're not getting oxygen at that point.
And so you think about it, it's not necessarily that any leader or a good, well-meaning person is necessarily going to collapse. But if we're not taking care of ourselves, resentment builds up, and we're not going to be our best self for whoever it is we're trying to help and serve. And we're also not setting a good example. So I'll, for example, start with a new client who's, say, a business owner, and they're working 70, 80 hours a week, and they're overweight, and they're not going on any vacations, and on and on and on, and they're wearing this, what I call the badge of busy. And so when I'll talk in the future, in some cases, they're even going to welcome their son or daughter into the business. And so I'll say quite often early on, so you want your daughter to work 70 hours a week? Oh, no. Well, why is that? Well, I want them to have a real life, and I don't want them to get a divorce like I did, and I don't want all these things, right? And so I start my journey with them, trying to help them gradually take care of themselves. So again, they can be there for the grandkids, they can, et cetera, and they can set an example. And in most cases, they don't. When they really think about it, they don't even want their workers to be unbalanced either. But they don't know how to get there, and that's where
I kind of help them get there. Yeah, it's interesting, you know. I think there is, and maybe I'm wrong, and you certainly can tell me that, but I think there's also a generational part of that, too. I'm not saying that there's a difference from a generation standpoint. There's just the fact that a lot of older workers feel that they have to be there all the time, and they, you know, they have to do that, and that you're not, if you're not working, you're not succeeding. Right? And there is that mindset, I guess is the word I'm looking for.
I think you hit the nail on the head of this idea that I was talking about living the way you're supposed to versus most of us that are boomers grew up in an age where you did whatever the boss said. You showed up early and you stayed late. And the next generations have viewed that, studied that, and seen some of the negative to that. And so another old saying that probably need to modernize, but it still holds true, is a lot of people live quiet lives of desperation to some level or another. In other words, they're in a situation outside of work or at work that is kind of too good or too painful to leave or change. And so they don't decide to be the CEO of their life, and so they don't take control and make the change. So a practical example on this hours and stuff, my last company that I worked for, way before it was in vogue, I said to my boss, and I didn't ask him permission, I said, hey, I'm going to start working in my home office on Wednesdays. And this is 16, 17 years ago. And he looked at me kind of cross-eyed. He goes, what do you mean you're going to work in your home office? I said, we have such an open-door policy here, I can't get my – and I'm in strategic planning. I need some heads-down time. So he kind of shook his head, but I went ahead and did it after, say, two Wednesdays at home. He's looking at the stuff I'm coming up with. He goes, this is unbelievable. How did you, you know, whatever? I said, well, you know, I got some time, heads down time. My kids are away at school and everything, and I have no problem being able to focus. And so then fast forward about 2 years later, one of my last projects was I moved 2,000 people to virtual offices and saved the company $3 million a year. And within a year after the project, I don't know, 87% or something were more productive, and 92% or something were happier. But now that seems commonplace, but that was like, I mean, I had to put in two dial-up lines in their house. We had to give them a furniture allowance. We had to work with some legal issues. Did all kinds of different things to make it work. But so just an example of kind of leading, leadership and leading your journey.
It is an interesting thing that, and those are social norms. Those are work norms.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that is things that people say and do. But I think at the CEO or C-suite level, owner level, there's such a personal responsibility that these individuals feel to their family, to their employees, that's why they get so connected. And at least that's what I see.
Yes, maybe most cases, leaders, a big part of their identity is the company they lead. And it's actually another piece and reason why I chose to do what I do. Even back in my corporate days, I would be involved with the CEOs. And in one case example, a CEO that was very hierarchical and very kind of degrading to the staff, about 2 weeks before he was ready to leave and retire, all of a sudden he came around pretending like he was everybody's best friend. And he was realizing that come 2 weeks and a Monday, even though he belonged to two golf courses, there wasn't anybody that wanted to play golf with him. And it made me, as much as I'd kind of been upset by him in the past, it actually made me feel sorry for him. And so one of the things...
Did you play golf with him?
No.
I had a feeling you were going to say that.
So one of the things that drives me is helping leaders not have that same experience. and that they have more things in their life. One of the things I coach people on is have at least three things that give you mojo in life. That way, and preferably four or five, but at least if there's three, if one of them goes away, it's not going to be anything. If you're an ardent golfer and all of a sudden you have an injury and you can't golf, if that's the only thing you do, be it in retirement or it's the only thing outside of work that gives you mojo, you're not going to be a happy camper.
Well, you, for the book, you say, are you ready to define and achieve your own version of success and happiness? And, of course, we're talking about the book, Lead Your Journey, Decide to Be the CEO of Your Life. It really is the combination of work and home. And that is a challenge sometimes for families, for businesses. I don't know the stats, and maybe you do, but the number of senior leaders who have gone through a divorce or gone through a change in their lives, it's got to be high.
It's high, and with my clients, I've been through divorces with them and child suicides and you name it, and been a privilege to help them as I can, both as a coach and a friend. And some of my most poignant moments have been through some of those things where they could turn to me. I mentioned an example in the book of one of my clients who called me and told me that I was in his top five as far as important people in his life, and that's why he was calling me to tell me that he had leukemia. So it was like the worst day and the best day.
Yeah, you're right.
But you go, my learning from some of those situations has been, what I say to myself is, what a privilege to feel so bad.
Yeah, no, that's what,
that's,
yeah,
that's what I wanted was these deep relationships with not just outside of work, but
sure,
work.
Sure, so, but it's so meaningful, right?
Exactly. Yep.
To make that happen. We're talking with Doug Packard. He is a consultant, CEO and owner of Renaissance Executive Forums, and his book, Lead Your Journey, Decide to Be the CEO of Your Life. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLLB 100.5 FM, and we will be right back.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
At 154 years old, Verrill Dana has an illustrious history and more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill Dana serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill Dana, one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact them today at verrilldana.com.
And we're back. You're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. And we want to thank our sponsors, Jackson Lewis, Rudman Winchell, Sheehan Finney, Verrill Dana, MaineHR.com, StrategicHR.com, and of course our radio station, WLOB. We want to thank them because without them, we would not be here today and having this wonderful conversation. And we're talking today about a book. We're talking about a book that I think you should go out and purchase. It's called Lead Your Journey, Decide to Be the CEO of Your Life. You know, Doug, we are talking about something that's very critical to CEOs, and that's their time. The return on time for any executive, really, forget about just CEOs, any executive, and I might even argue anyone, right? Not
yes.
just executive, anyone. Return on time is critical. In your book, you talk about self-leadership techniques on how to maximize this ROT. Talk a little bit about that. Talk about some of the goals, how to manage that energy and so forth. And let me hear what you have to say on that.
Well, I have to, again, credit one of my clients who I was doing kind of naturally in my coaching some of this, but this one client brought it to clarity for me. We're at an annual event where members bring their spouses, and we have a personal planning day and a business planning day. And I asked on the personal day if anyone had completed one of their goals from the previous year that they were especially proud of. And so this active member of mine, who in the past wouldn't normally share many of his feelings, raises his hand. So I'm a little bit nervous about what he's going to say, right? He says, some of you that were here last year knew that one of my personal goals was to get my pilot's license. And he said, well, with kind of that permission, if you will, and the accountability from my own forum, I not only got my pilot's license, I bought a plane with a partner. And so everybody goes, oh, that's great. He says, I just recently realized why it was so important to me. And you can kind of hear a pin drop, and there's like 40 people in the room. He says, when I was growing up, my favorite times were flying with my father. I lost him a couple of years ago, and now when I'm up in the air, I feel like he's right beside me. And so when I was later on debriefing with him in a coaching session, he said, Doug, you've not only helped me increase my ROI, you've helped me increase my ROT. And I'm looking at him, and I said, what? He says, my return on time on this earth. And again, one of my best moments in my coaching career. And as I dove into that and formalized more of my tools for it and more of my coaching around that, it's just been a great piece of value, hopefully, I add to.
No, it really is. I mean, time is, right? My dad always used to say, speaking of dads, yes. he'd snap his fingers and go, listening to those seconds, you're never going to get them again. Because they just keep moving along.
Yep.
And there's a lot of truth to that, right? There's an awful lot of truth to that. So talk to us about some of the techniques that leaders can do to maximize that time.
So the couple of things that get in the way, one is, like you had mentioned before, about letting go of things. So as an example, for this particular that same member, for his organization to evolve, for the company to grow, he needed to give more authority to his head of operations and stay out of his way. Well, if you're going to be at work every day, all day, and you don't have some hobbies, et cetera, or you don't have other things to do, then you're going to stay there and you're going to be in the way. So in this case, we did a couple of things. One is we got him focused on a higher percentage of his time doing external sales, in this case actually overseas. So there was his reason that he's going to be doing something valuable to the company while he hands over some of the reins, more reins to the operations person. And another thing he could look forward to on the personal side, which happened to be the plane and acrobatic competitions. So here was his reward. Because of it all, the operations head grew in his capabilities. The business grew, and he brought in more sales, and he was having more fun, and it was a win-win across the board. So,
when somebody is thinking about their time, a lot of leaders think, well, if I take time off, my employees will take more time off, or they'll see that I'm not as dedicated or not as focused or not as whatever to the business, and it could send the wrong signal. How do you get past that mind frame?
Well, the item that usually is in the way from that is lack of metrics. And so if you think about it, an easy example is a salesperson. If you're looking for your average salesperson to bring in, $100,000 worth of sales each quarter, do you really care if they do that in half a day, half a day per day or in 60 hours, which is better, really, right? It's actually better if they do it in less time, right? Mm-hmm. So in most cases, we don't have good metrics, and so therefore we unintentionally, I believe, have the metric of time. So now someone came in early and stayed late. So what? If they didn't get anything done or there's no metric that they push forward, it's really the opposite of good, right? And so pushing those metrics can allow people to actually take more ownership. If you get this metric done and take a 2-hour lunch to go take a run or whatever, what do we care? But it forces the metrics. Obviously, there's some rules that aren't conducive to that. If you're a customer facing and you got to be there for when the customers come in or stuff like that, but there's more that are that aren't. And as you walk through that, you can it really helps to show respect and trust to people. And I'm sure you do a lot of that kind of coaching with
people.
Yeah,
you know what's interesting is you use the term permission. And I think there is an element of that that is sometimes missing in how people think and how people act and what they do and how they act in terms of the long range. And there is imagery, branding that goes into this, right? And people yes. have an image and a brand. We all do, right? We all do. And there is a persona behind that image and brand. And so sometimes it's contrary to what the image has been. And so brand change or focus has to be part of it. How do you move that?
One of the things that can help set a leader free is to hire really good people and then get out of their way. And by really good people, in most cases, when you drill down on that, one of the things you're looking for is, do you trust those people to do the right thing most of the time and to get the metric done, if you will? And when they make that shift to trusting people, it kind of basically makes the good people want to stay. I've got three sons. One of them's 32, and he's been working for a financial company the last 9 months or so. He said, "Dad, this is the first company I've worked for in all these different jobs and stuff that really seems to respect my input, really shows appreciation, right? And more or less stays out of my way for getting the metric done," and he's set records on their metrics. So he stayed there and likes it. And another piece is out of necessity is that, as you alluded to a little bit earlier, for the most part, and generalizations are dangerous, but millennials aren't going to stand for being watched over every minute of every day. So life's too short for that. So.
Yeah, and that really is a mind shift and a generational shift in terms of where people are and what they're at. In the forum work that you do, do you find these are common issues, that time is a big issue?
Time, development of people, one kind of catch-all phrase that comes up a lot is, how can I get my people to think like owners or think like me? And this gets right at part of this thing is, do you trust them? And do you have the metrics, right? And then do you listen to their input and in many cases let them go maybe make a mistake or let them go try something that you might not be totally on board with, but maybe it would work. And is it really going to hurt if it's a small percentage of the time to try that thing? So another piece about that is quite often I'll coach my members to turn the opportunity or the issue around and not let them give it to you as, you know, put the monkey on your back. So literally just ask them questions about, okay, why do you think it would be important for us to make that change? What do you think our options are to make that change? How much do you think it would cost to make that change? Yeah. What do you think, you know, and let them go continue to do the research or whatever. And quite often they'll either talk themselves out of it or they will enlighten you to, but you've brought them into the planning process versus just saying, what do you think? That's crazy. It would never work because of this. So unintentionally, quite often we shut them down and shut down that. So that's back to that to be part of
the checklist. Yeah, well, the communication part, right? So the communication, really listening. I mean, good leaders listen, but not all leaders are good leaders, right? In terms of being able to listen, and that really becomes a challenge for it. The book's been out just a month or so in terms of it being out there. What's been the result so far?
I think I've got a fairly wide network because of being a coach since 2002, and so a lot of people are quite anxious to get it and use it. And one of the ways I'm introducing people to it and just trying to provide more value to the community really is through a couple of workshops I've been starting to give, which have been really well received. One is actually on this time leadership, and I call it time leadership. And sometimes a way that comes up, and this may be interesting to some of your members, is that the idea of work-life balance is the way it's usually brought up. But, for example, a few months back, one of my clients was approached by the Mid-Maine Chamber and said, hey, do you know of anybody that could, like, speak on work-life balance? And so he thought of me, and so I did a workshop, but I entitled it, you know, Time Leadership, and it went off really well. We had 90 people there, so it was great. And then the other one is quite often both sales and networking. Those two words get a really bad, you know this from your Dale Carnegie stuff.
Absolutely.
And sales training. Sales and networking, for those that have never been in sales or whatever, gets a bad rap as to it's a negative thing. And just like any functional role, there's people that are bad at it and aren't ethical, and there's people that are good at it and are ethical.
Right.
And the same thing with networking. And so another workshop that I've been starting to give that has been really well received is something I call authentic networking. And what I've learned, and it's part of this is in the book, that really business success and life success is about relationships. And to develop relationships, you really got to be a good networker. And, or you know, and the best word I could come up with at the time was authentic. And so I take them through a workshop, and that, again, this was really well received. And it's about, a big part of it's about managing and adjusting how you show up when you're networking, and whether you have goals for it, whether you, you know, are giving before you're trying to get, and all those kinds of things. So,
well, you know, you've given us a great overview of the book. We're going to come back for the last segment, talk a little bit about the executive, the Renaissance executive forums that you do, and we're going to have a great discussion about that. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM, and we'll be right back.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at JacksonLewis.com. That's JacksonLewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMA Career and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. And I do want to, at this point, by the way, just thank my producer. She's done a wonderful job today keeping me in line. Debbie, thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. Thanks, Deb. And we're talking with Doug Packard. He is the CEO and owner of Renaissance Executive Forums, and he has this wonderful book. We've been talking about your book all day. What's the title of your book?
It is Lead Your Journey, Decide to Be the CEO of Your Life.
Excellent. But, you know, you do more than that. And as you said, coach. Talk to us a little bit about your coaching. Talk to us a little bit about some, if somebody was interested in talking to you, what that would mean.
As I looked at my career coming up and the characteristics I was looking for my next phase of my career, three things came up that really related to what eventually I chose, which is doing peer advisory boards. One was I loved bringing people together to learn from each other. One was kind of the strategic planning and thinking outside the box. And third was helping people explore their paradigms and hopefully getting past them so they could even be happier in life, basically, and more fulfilled. And so when I came across this international franchise called Renaissance Executive Forums, it just hit all my criteria. And I purchased the rights to Maine and New Hampshire. And probably the most important piece to remember or where it started from was it was developed by interviewing about 200 peers of mine, mid-career successful leaders. And basically they researched and said, look, you've been involved with consultants, with Chamber of Commerces, with industry groups. You know, what did you like about those activities? What did you hate? And then went further to say, if you were going to build your own team of confidants, what would it look like? Who'd be there? Who wouldn't be there? What rules would you have? How would it run? And from that started up some forums, bringing together in each forum 6 to 12 leaders of similar size, non-competing companies, signed confidentiality to help each other get from good to great. And funny, when you build what the customer asks for, within a couple of years, they had so many forums going in the San Diego area that they decided, gee, how can we bring this to more leaders and make more money? And so they decided to document all the research and the tools they were using and franchise it. So in late 2001, I got introduced to them, and it hit all my seven criteria, and I bought the rights to Maine and New Hampshire. And so what one of the things that intrigued me, along with the idea of the deep relationships, I actually, in my due diligence, went down to New Jersey and sat in on a forum of one of my peers. And quite honestly, in the updates, one of the members said to the group, "Hey, you know, you've been helping me all these business problems, but remember how a couple years ago I tried to get my wife to go to counseling? And she said at the time, well, we got some issues going on with our daughter. I just don't have the emotional energy." And they said, "Yeah, we remember." And he said, "Well, my daughter's gone off to college, and she just came to me the other day and said she's ready now to go to counseling with me and see if we can't take our marriage from good to great." So he didn't belabor it, didn't whatever, but and I said, "Oh, this is for me." If that's a group that can share that in addition to the business stuff and help each other with, you know, resources, ideas, accountability, I'm in. So I came back to Maine and started up in early 2002, and it's just been a great journey. And I give a personal business update. I would say it's generally 90% business, 10% personal. Mm-hmm. But the idea that they're all living in the same situation, a very similar situation, and that we're all, in many cases, in mid-career, we're taking care of aging parents. We're trying to put kids through college. We're on boards of directors. And so it's like, wait, where's me time? And sometimes we can help each other with paradigms that work inside and outside of work and make a real major move forward. So,
well, Doug, I got to tell you, you do a lot of great work, and certainly a lot of great companies have been helped by you. And obviously, individuals who are interested in your book, Lead Your Journey, Decide to Be the CEO of Your Life, should go to Amazon and purchase it, or go to your website. What's your website?
DougPackardConsulting.com is available off from there, too.
Sure, it's DougPackard Consulting.com. It's there, and we'll make sure that we have all this information on HRPowerHour.com right after the show so they connect with you directly. Thank you so much for being on the show today.
My pleasure.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM. And now your HR Tip of the Week. Your HR Tip of the Week is being sponsored by VeralDana.com.
Hi, this is Tawny Alvarez from Veral Dana. Two words, job descriptions. You've heard me mention them a lot, but hint, that's because they're important. Job descriptions are a document that managers, human resources, attorneys, and administrative agencies are always going to want to look at when dealing with employee issues. Why? Because the job description lays forth the company's expectations with regard to the individual's position. It's hard to tell an employee he or she is not meeting standards when you have not provided the employee with adequate notice as to what the standards are. Further, if an employee is ever injured, on the job or off, the job description is going to be important to determine whether the employee can perform the essential functions of the position with or without a reasonable accommodation. I know that human resources professionals and managers in general have a lot on their plates, and creating job descriptions is time-consuming. But ask the employee to help by keeping track of what he or she does during the course of the week. Use this as a starting point for any job description. For further information for best practices concerning job descriptions, contact a member of Veral Dana's Labor and Employment Practice Group.
And that's your HR Tip of the Week, sponsored by VeralDana.com. Thank you for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 1310 a.m. or streaming live on WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.